You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
All right, so we are 1 week away from wrapping up this series called The Deceiver about the life of Jacob. And we're going to do a lot of catching up because, you know, he wasn't, well, you'll see. But before we get to that, I want to talk to you guys about life hacks, okay? And we know that life hacks are so valuable for us today. Thank you. I know where you're going with that because I have a mess here because this, you'll see. Anyway, life hacks. So I wanted to share some things with you that are just, you know, exceptional, super helpful, that you're going to want to remember and take away with you today and for the rest of your, of course, life. So the first thing I want to talk about is this is an incredible hack for saving electricity, for free electricity. You with me? What you do is you take an ordinary power strip. Okay, make sure you get an ordinary power strip. And you take this plug end and you plug it in to the power strip. Free electricity. Yep. So then you just plug your stuff in there and it is free. So don't forget that. Okay, I see you're skeptical. All right, fine, whatever. Anyway, say you've got a really old small phone. You know, like, oh, it's so small, it's so old. And you're like, but I'm so old too that I can't see the screen. And so you're like, what do I do? Hey, here's an idea. Get an ordinary glass of water and then place the phone in the water and it magnifies it hundreds of times. So now you can see the screen a whole lot better. All right, so don't forget that. Now you can take that away with you. Anytime you can't see, oh, it's upside down. Anytime you can't see, just put it in a glass of water and it will magnify your screen. You with me? You with me? Good? Okay, cool. Let's see, what's next here? This is a great thing. Now, hold on, stay there, Isaac. This one, guys, okay, inflation, you know, money's tight. You know, we know how that is right now. So here is a way to never have to pay for a meal out again. Does that sound good?
Yeah,
all right, good. Yeah, so only Steve feels that way. The rest of you don't care. Well, here it is. Ready? When you get the receipt, okay, you pay with your credit card. When you get the receipt, it'll come and it'll look like this. It'll give you the amount, and all you do is take the amount and make it a negative for the tip, and then you owe nothing. Then you don't have to pay a cent. So do that every time you go out to eat. You'll never pay a cent again, and your servers will love you forever. So you get it? Okay. You seem skeptical. Guys, come on. Okay, I get it. The morning, you're like, oh, wow, it's a really busy early rush. You made your toast, but, you know, there's so much going on, you don't have time. I'll solve your problem. You take your toothpaste, and then you just simply spread your toothpaste on your toast, and then rubbing your teeth and eating. The menthol just hit me there. And then it saves you tons of time in the morning. So that's all you need to do. Just spread your toothpaste on your toast, breakfast, toothbrush together in one. All right. I'm going to swallow it eventually. Thanks. Sodium fluoride. Okay, so here's another thing. Okay, you guys, again, still, you're not with me. You know, you're like, oh, tonight I want to have pasta for dinner. But you're like, oh, man, I got to boil the water. So you get the water, you put it in the pot, you turn it on, you know, maybe you put it on your stove, and you wait and wait and wait. Finally, the water boils, then you put the pasta in. Here's a hack. You with me? Save time by boiling the water, boiling a bunch of water, and then putting it in bags and freezing it. Then you will have pre-boiled water ready to go the next time you want to make pasta. Okay, you're still not with me. All right, but that'll save you tons of time because then your water's already pre-boiled and apparently this bag is very leaky. All right. One more here. So, you know, you're reading your book. You're like, oh, yeah, okay. Oh, wait, it's time for me to go eat my pasta because, you know, your water is already pre-boiled. And you're like, what am I going to do? I don't have a bookmark. Here's a quick tip. Take some ketchup and just, oh, come on. There. Then just squeeze it right into the book and you'll know where your spot is. You don't even have to bring an actual bookmark. Just grab some ketchup and squeeze it in. Look, here it is. Here's my page. I'm on page 53. Page 53. So now you'll never lose your spot. Okay? So, guys, I care about you. So this is all free. Okay? This is just for you to help you become a better person, to make your life better. All right? So I would strongly encourage you to do that. Now, I will also just add, to be clear, if you're watching online at home and you happen to have toddlers in the room or anyone in the underage that might not realize that I'm being, you know, facetious, that I'm joking, do not try this at home. where's mommy's phone? I made it better for you to read it. So the thing is, and I actually looked this up, the definition of a life hack is actually in the dictionary. It is this. It's usually simple and clever tip or technique for accomplishing some familiar task more easily and efficiently. And so the idea of a life hack, you know, and that's kind of the thing. Oh, look at this great thing that I learned how to do. And some of them are great. Some of them aren't. But the idea is to try to shortcut a process, to find a different use to save time, save money, save energy. And the thing is, let me just be clear. There is no life hack for changing someone's heart. There is no life hack for changing someone's heart to forgive. And a lot of times we kind of like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna find this quick way because this will solve the problem. This will make them forgive me. This will fix my relationship. This will restore things. And so this is what I'm going to do. And the problem is that the only thing that can change someone's heart when it comes to relationship, when it comes to reconciliation, when it comes to forgiveness, the only thing, or should I say the only one, that can change someone's heart is God. Anything else is a hack fail. And these were fails, if you did not gather that. Like, some of you are still like, was he for real? Like, no, it's just joking, okay? But sometimes we try that. We're like, I want to do this thing, and that will fix my relationship with that person. And I just want you to know, like, we do this all the time. We try things, and we're going to get into that some more. But we try. Like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be nice. I'm going to solve this problem this way. I'm going to give in to whatever they want, or I'm going to give them money, or I'm going to whatever. And we try to do things that are life hack type stuff, and we try to hack forgiveness in someone's life. But really, only God can do that. And so the point we're going to look at this morning is this, and that is that our grudges aren't a match for God's forgiveness. Now the point here, each phrase, sorry, that was me. That was my finger on the thing. The point phrases are like they're similar each week. But that's why it's worded this way. But it would be better to say our grudges are no match for God's forgiveness. Because what I want us to look at today as we continue on the life of Jacob is that Jacob has an issue here, and he is going to try a bunch of hacks to solve the problem, but ultimately he can't. And you're going to see, spoiler, that when he gives it up to God, then the problem is fixed. So, let me catch you up on the story here. So last week, I wasn't here. I was on vacation. We were in D.C. last weekend. We had a great time down there. And last week, you watched a video with Craig Rochelle, and he was talking about Jacob and his wives. And of course, you remember the story. Jacob had to flee from Esau, which will matter in a moment, and he had to go back to his homeland of Haran, according to his dad and mom sent him there, to find a wife from among his own people. And of course, you know, I'm not going to rehash the whole story from last week. You can watch it on our website, online, or our YouTube channel. But basically, Jacob ends up with two wives, Rachel and Leah. And he preferred Rachel. He ended up getting Leah out of, someone deceived him. What? He got deceived and therefore ended up with Leah first and then ended up marrying Rachel. And so that's kind of where we left off last week. And so now I'm going to cover, give or take, 20 years of Jacob's life, since this is the life of Jacob. I'm going to cover about 20 years of his life because this is going to matter for where we're going to actually go this morning. So I'm going to be fast here. And so if you're trying to take notes, like there's not that many things to take notes, and I'm not going to be reading all the passages here. I'm just going to be going quick. But actually, we'll turn on the house lights, I guess, if you guys want to open a paper Bible. But good luck, you know, because we're going to cover a lot of chapters. But I'm talking about 20 years that go by. And just to be clear, these 20 years are broken down this way, give or take. There were 7 years, if you remember last week, there were 7 years that Jacob worked to earn what he thought was Rachel, but ended up getting Leah. And so then he was like, you deceived me. I was going to marry Rachel. And Rachel's dad, Laban, said, okay, here's the deal. You know, go ahead and give me another 7 years after that, and you can marry Rachel now, basically a week later. And so he marries Rachel. So he has 7 years for Leah, 7 years for Rachel. And then he gets ready to kind of go again. And Laban says, hey, you're doing such a great job. Can you stay here and work my flocks and kind of run my people? Because we see that God is blessing you and God is blessing me. Laban says, God is blessing me through you, Jacob. And so he asked him to hang on for another 6 years. So we're going to kind of cover what that looks like. So 7 plus 7 is 6 is 20. I got that. So the first thing that we see here is that Jacob has 12 sons. And this is important for the scheme of like everything. Jacob has 12 sons. And again, you can read about that in Genesis 29 through 30. But just as a quick overview, Jacob, and you heard some of this last week, Jacob loved Rachel, didn't really care for Leah. And so it says that God kind of kept Rachel from having kids, but allowed Leah to have kids. And so Leah ended up having 4 kids. The oldest was Reuben. Then she had Simeon. Then she had Levi. Then she had Judah. And that's kind of where it went. Judah was the last of the 4 kids there. Well, then Rachel was really jealous at this point because you know, Leah had 4 kids and Rachel didn't have any. So she did this thing, and we've actually seen it earlier in the story, and we'll see it later, where she said, hey, you sleep with my servant. Sleep with my servant to Jacob. Jacob, sleep with my servant, and then those kids will count as mine because I own her and she's my servant. And so he slept with Rachel's servant, Bilhah, and she had 2 kids, Dan and Naphtali. Well, then after Naphtali was born, Leah was like, whoa, 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 wait a second. This is not fair. You can't have kids through your servant. So she says to her servant, Zilpah, Leah says to her servant, you go sleep with Jacob. And actually, there was even this deal with they had to like make a trade for mandrakes and said, hey, I'm going to trade my mandrakes to sleep with your husband. It's whack stuff, okay? We're not saying this is good. So Zilpah, Leah's servant, sleeps with Jacob and has Gad and Asher. So Gad and Asher are counted as Leah's children. This is with the trade-off thing. Then there was the trade-off for Leah. And Leah said, okay, I'm going to go sleep with Jacob now because you can have my mandrakes. And then she has 2 more boys, Issachar and Zebulun, and then a girl, Zebulun, and then a girl named Dinah. And we're not going to talk about Dinah. There's a chapter about her, but we're going to kind of jump over that because we're staying with the life of Jacob. But there's a story about Dinah in the middle there. And then finally, after, let me do the count here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. After 10 boys, and again, we talked about the very first week, the descendants were reckoned, it was through the boys. Sorry, the ladies didn't count back then, but it was through the guys. And so then after 10 kids, God finally felt, I shouldn't say it that way, but God saw Rachel's sadness and Rachel's hurt. And so it says that he allowed her to have a child. And she had a son named Joseph. And that was the 11th son. And then eventually, and this is a little spoiler, eventually after what we're talking about today, she has a 12th son of Jacob, and his name is Benjamin. And Joseph and Benjamin were Rachel's biological children, and therefore kind of the favorites. We won't really see that in our story, but Jacob wasn't the best dad ever. He was deceptive. What? And then his kids learned it. Anyway, so eventually she has Benjamin. Unfortunately, Benjamin was born with... Rachel died in childbirth having Benjamin. So that's a little spoiler for the future here. But anyway, so there's 12 children. It matters because there's going to be an issue with a name in a little bit. And these 12 children, for all intents and purposes, and we can discuss the details some other time, become the 12 tribes of Israel. And so this is a big deal because these 12 sons, but we're not going to talk about them today because that's for another day. We're just catching you up on the story. Then after these 12 kids are born, Jacob, of course, was about to leave. And Laban says, no, stick around. I want you to hang around here and keep my flocks because we see that you're blessing us and God's blessing you and all that. And so he said, that's fine. And Jacob kind of came up with this thing. And we're not sure if this was like a God thing. I mean, ultimately, it's all a God thing. Whether it was a God thing or if he learned something genetically about this. But he found out that if he put speckled branches at the watering trough of his flocks, those flocks would mate and then have speckled or like weird looking offspring. And so Jacob has a plan. And guess what? He decides to deceive Laban. I know. You're like, what? And you're like, yeah, I know. And free power and Jacob deceiving someone. So Jacob has this flock deception where what he does is he says to Laban, okay, fine, I'll work for you 6 years, but here's the deal. I want the ugly ones. Can I have all the ugly herds? So that would be the speckled, spotted, the dark sheep. Like in terms of culture, those were not considered prime animals. And of course, Laban's like, sure, you can have all the speckled ones. Nobody wants them anyway. But just to be safe, Laban, he learned some deception. Obviously, we've known that as well. Laban said, that's fine. Anything that you have that is produced, that is speckled or spotted or the black sheep, literally the black sheep of the family, you can have them. And so what he does is he takes all of his own speckled ones and puts them over with his own sons and says, yeah, good luck, Jacob. Because obviously, and if you know anything about genetics, that, you know, it takes a gene to pass on something, typically. You know, you're not going to have, well, there's recessive and dominant. I'm not going to talk about Hegelian dynamics right now or Punnett squares, which I love. It's weird. Anyway, so Laban deceives Jacob, takes all those, but Jacob already has a plan in place. He says, I'm going to put this speckled thing in. So here's what he did. Every time he saw a strong animal, this was a strong sheep, goat, camel, whatever it was, anytime he saw a strong animal, a male and a female, he would put that speckled branch near the watering trough. And those two strong animals would mate and make strong offspring that happened to be speckled. And so this was his plan, and you can read about it in Genesis chapter 30. And he ends up getting a huge herd, a huge flock of all these animals that are strong, but a little bit on the ugly side. They were the speckled ones. They were the ones. And so eventually his flocks grow, and it gets to the point where Laban's sons get mad. And everybody's a little bit tired of Jacob because everything Jacob touches turns to gold and speckles and sparkles. Anyway, and so they're like, there are too many flocks. There are too many issues here. So they start to kind of grumble against it. And Jacob realizes this. And he also knows that, you know, Laban has deceived him for Leah. He's asked him to work for Rachel. He's asked him for 6 more years. So he's like, I'm done letting this guy talk me out of things. And so he goes to his wives and said, look, ladies, let's get out of here. And so they flee at night, running away from Laban, from everyone. And in the process, God actually said, you know what? It's time. It's time for you to go back home. Now, that's 20 years later. And we'll talk in a minute about why he left home. But God says, go back home. So he deceives. He has his fleeing deception. Yeah, the next slide there. He flees in the middle of the night and runs away to go back to his land, takes everyone with him. And then eventually Laban pursues him. He finds out about it, catches up with him, I think it was 7 days later. And he's like, why did you leave in the middle of the night? And he's like, because you're a jerk. Because you're going to be mean again. And you're going to be like, please, oh, please stay longer. That's the special translation version. And it's in the message. And so he tells him, you know, no, I was like, I'm tired of this. You've been cheating me. You've made me work all these years. And actually, there's something there. And I try to do the research and no one really knows. But he says 10 times you kept changing the wages you were going to pay me. And so he's like, I'm done. And he says, but you didn't even let me say goodbye to my girls and my grandkids. And he's like, fine, say goodbye. And so then they were like, OK, look. And God actually appears to Laban and says, don't hurt Jacob. Don't mess with him. And so they make a treaty right there. And they have a treaty together and say, okay, look, here's a pile of rocks. Here's a cairn. Here's a cairn. And whenever we see this cairn, that's going to be the dividing line. Anything on this side, that's for Laban and his people. And this side is for Jacob and his people. And we are not going to cross those rocks to hurt each other. And so they made a treaty there. And so that's kind of the end of those 20 years that we just kind of covered. Now we're going to actually talk today about what we're talking about today. And that is Jacob's life hack fail. And this is a serious fail. This is really, it's a plastic bag. So we're going to talk about his fail and what he did wrong here. So to catch you up, obviously, we just talked about the last 20 years. Well, where was he 20 years earlier? And this was from 4 weeks ago, I think. Genesis 27, we read this. Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. You remember? We talked about that was the starting line and jumping the gun and how Jacob's mom, Rebecca, right? Yeah, Isaac, Rebecca, yeah. Jacob's mom cheated Isaac with Jacob's knowing out of the blessing and gave it to cheated Isaac and Esau out of the blessing and gave it to Jacob. And so Esau had held a grudge because of that. He said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are near, because Isaac was about to die. He says, then I will kill my brother Jacob. And that led, and we're not going to rehash the whole story there, but that led to what we talked about the next week with Jacob fleeing and going back for a wife from the family of Laban, who was Rebekah's brother. And so that's kind of where we are. And that's why what we're getting into matters. Because now Jacob has this brother that wants to kill him. And let me just be clear. When we talk, and we're gonna have a chance for you to kind of respond to this today, possibly. When we talk about relationship issues, and we've got some serious relationship issues. You have some serious relationship issues. There's people that you love. There's people that you care about. There's situations. There's rifts. There's walls that have been built up. There's separation. There's, some people don't even talk. And this is important. But for the most part, I don't think any of you have someone that wants to kill you. That's pretty extreme. Like, yeah, we don't get together at Christmas because there was this thing that happened a few years back. Okay. Versus, yeah, I have to avoid them because the last time I was there, they threw a hatchet at me. And they regularly try to kill me. They've hired hitmen. Like, that's an extreme relationship issue. And I know it almost seems silly, but I want you to understand, this extreme situation is going to be resolved by God. Okay, so that's the story. So now we have this hack. And so Jacob realizes he's got to go back to his brother. His brother's back at home. His brother wants to kill him. It's been 20 years. And so he tries a couple of what I'm calling forgiveness hacks. He tries some quick and easy things to solve problems, going like, yeah, I'll totally throw my toothpaste on my toast to save some time in the morning. And he's like, this is going to solve the problem. So he does two things. The first thing he does is he gives kind words. He's like, okay, maybe I can butter him up. Maybe I can butter up Esau and let him know. And so we got a lot of verses we're reading here, but I'm going to do this. And I want you to notice something in case I forget to tell you later. As you look at this passage, there's going to be a change in Jacob's life. You'll see. It'll be pretty obvious. But look at what he does with everyone else but him. And I've highlighted those verses, those phrases each time. So here's what happens. The first thing, it says, Jacob sent messengers, there's that phrase, ahead of him. So the messengers are in front of Jacob. Just hold on to that thought for later. To his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He instructed them, this is what you're going to say to my lord Esau. Your servant Jacob, remember who was going to serve the other? Remember that prophecy and the whole deal? Like, again, you can catch up online at mc3church.org/the deceiver. And this whole idea of forgiveness we talked about in our Sorry Not Sorry series. So you can look at a whole series about forgiveness. So you can find that online. And also on the slide. So anyway, he says, tell my lord Esau that your servant Jacob says, I've been staying with Laban and remained there till now. Just catching him up on the story. I've been with Laban for a while. And I have cattle and donkeys and sheep and goats, male and female servants. Now I'm sending this message to my lord that I might find favor in your eyes. He's basically kind of like, hey, listen, Esau, remember that jerk that kind of cheated you out and ran? Hey, I'm doing all right now. And I care about you. You know, I'm kind of important. And yet I consider myself your servant. So he just kind of uses the kind word thing. Okay, I know it all. I'll say the right things. I'll say the nice things, and that will solve the situation. And we're like, why would he say that? His brother wanted to kill him. He cheated him. Like, he kind of deserves to die in Esau's eyes. And yet, will he try to do the same thing? Oh, maybe I just say the right words. Maybe I just need to say this time. Maybe I just need to send that text, and that will solve everything. Maybe I'll just be like, JK, which means just kidding if you're old. Just kidding. So, I didn't really mean that. And that solves it, Oh, no offense. That's the other great one. You're a jerk. I just spit everywhere. I'm a jerk because I spit all over you. But just no offense. You're a jerk, but no offense. No, that was very offensive. And yet we try to use words. And that's what the first thing that Jacob tried to do. He's like, maybe I can kind of calm things down. Like, that'll be the solution to this problem. If we just tell them some good things, they can feel good. That'll solve the relationship rift. And then it goes on and says, when the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, we went to your brother Esau, and now he's coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. Oh, crap. What? What did I just do? He's like, hey, let's get that hornet's nest and kind of kick it a little bit and then play around with it. Now Esau's coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. So clearly, in great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups. Kind of maybe a smart thing. And the flocks and herds and camels as well. Divided everything in two groups. He says, if Esau comes and attacks one group, the other group can kind of run around and escape. Or if he attacks this group, the other group can kind of run around and escape. He says, that's what we'll do. We'll divide them into two, and at least I can save half of my family. But that didn't work. So then Jacob has another forgiveness hack. He tries physical gifts. Now, just to be clear here, is you notice we skipped a couple of verses because we're going to come back to those verses in a second. But he's like, okay, I couldn't kind of coerce him with lofty words. So now let's try to bribe him. And so in verse 13 in chapter 32, it says he spent the night there. We'll talk about where that was in a second. And from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau. Now look at the math here. I wrote it down so I wouldn't mess it up. He gave him 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 female camels with their young, 40 cows and 10 bulls, and 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. Now, honestly, let me just be straight with you. Growing up, if I had read this passage, even let's say 5 years ago, if I had read this passage, like, what is the deal with like not as many female goats and male goats? And I didn't realize that like one bull can like fertilize a whole flock. Like, I learned that because we watch these British farming shows, because that's what I do because I love my wife. It's totally true. So we watch British farming shows, and you have to turn the subtitles on. One of them is like upper Scotland. They're like, and then the subtitles are like, that was a really nice day. And it's not translated. That's what they said. It's just I couldn't understand their accent. Anyway, so that's how it works. And so this is like, I'm going to give you some males to fertilize all these females. That's kind of how it works there. So if you didn't get that, now you do. And if you don't understand that, talk to someone that lives in Belleville, not me. Okay, I don't understand all that. But anyway, so he says he put them in the care of his servants, each herd of by itself, and said to his servants. So we're looking at, by the way, 550 plus animals, because we don't know exactly how many young came with the camels. But 550 animals, he sent them in individual groups. So there was a goat group, a ram group, a camel group, a bull group, and a donkey group. And he broke them up and said, go ahead of me. Again, look who's afraid? Jacob. Who's in the back? Jacob. Go ahead of me. Send the servants ahead. And keep some space between the herds. So like, so that this isn't going to be one massive gift. This will be like a gift, and then a gift, and then a gift that keeps on giving. And you get a camel, and you get a camel, and you get a camel. Like, it just keeps going. He's like, that's what I want it to be. So it's like this wonderful thing. And if you think about this time last year, we were reading the story of Job and ruin. And remember his story at the beginning? It was just the opposite. Oh, and then these people died, and these flocks were killed, and this is what happened. Like, it was kind of the opposite thing. Not that these are connected, but just interesting. So he says, spread them out. He says to the one in the lead, next slide, when my brother Esau meets you and asks you, who do you belong to and where are you going? Where did you come from? Where did you go? Who owns all these animals in front of you? You're going to say, they belong to your servant Jacob. They are a gift sent to my lord Esau. Again, do you see where Jacob is like, I'm going to put me under here and put you up here? And he is coming behind us. He also instructed the second and third and all the others who followed the herds. You are to say the same thing to Esau when you meet him. And be sure to say, your servant Jacob is coming behind us. For he thought, I will pacify him with these gifts I am sending on ahead. Later when I see him, perhaps he will receive him. Hack number two, I'm going to try to give gifts. I'm going to try to appease him. I'm going to try to, you know, hey, I know I don't have a great relationship with you, son, but let me give you some money. Maybe I can buy you stuff. Hey, I know dad, we haven't talked in years, or mom, you know, maybe I'll give you a really nice Valentine's card. Like we do the same thing to try to fix relationships. And they seem like good ideas, but ultimately their hack fails. And then it continues on the story. So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, so all the flocks were gone, his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, because Benjamin wasn't born yet, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all of his possessions. So Jacob is like, hey, women and children first, kill them, and I'm still back here. He sent everybody, even his own wife and his kids first, and he stayed back. So those were the two hacks, kind words, physical gifts. However, there was a thing that happened in between this. And this is all basically in the same, you know, the sending the all the gifts and the camels and all that was in one day. He decided to do that after the people came back and said, your brother's coming with 400 men. And there was something that he did right in the middle that led from Jacob's forgiveness hacks to God's name change. And we're going to get into this more next week as we wrap up this series. But in the middle of these two moments of the kind words and the gifts, he finally broke down and did something we haven't seen Jacob do yet, except when he did, and we saw this a little bit earlier when we had the Jacob's ladder where he saw God, the angels coming up and down. And he was like, wow, God was here. This is pretty powerful. But he uninitiated prayed. And here is the key to what comes next. It wasn't about the kind words. It wasn't about the gifts. It wasn't the bribes. It wasn't the hacks that he tried to do to solve the situation, to coerce, to appease, to pacify Esau. It was this. And so in jumping back, I said we skipped a couple of verses. Well, this is what happened in between those two moments, all in the same night, basically. It says, then Jacob prayed, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, Lord, you who said to me, go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. Remember, we talked about that. God made a promise to Jacob despite what Jacob did, because we said there is nothing you can do to make God love you less. Santa has a naughty and nice list. God does not have a naughty list. He says, God, you made that promise to me. I remember that. And then he said, go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. He says, I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff. Think about that. I had to run for my life. So all I had was my staff when I crossed this Jordan, when I had to cross and run away. But now I have become two camps, two nations. He split them into two groups, and they're huge groups of people. And his words were, save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau. For I am afraid. He will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper, and I will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. So God, you made a promise, and I'm counting on you to keep that promise, and I'm asking you right now, God, please, change his heart. Open up his heart to forgiveness. Because I'm going to try it with my kind words. I'm going to try it with my gifts. But what you're going to see here, spoiler, is that it was the prayer. It was God who changed Esau's heart. So you have this interesting, he prays to God, and then God appears to him in a moment later where he goes to a different name, Israel's name. And so kind words. In between, he's praying, God, please save me. He sends the gifts. And then it says, and we said, I'll come back to this. He says, he sent everyone else on ahead and he spent the night there. So he is alone. And that's where we pick up in verse 24. So Jacob was left alone and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. Now, spoiler again, this is God. God is wrestling with Jacob. And you're like, how did that work? We can talk about that some other time. But we know, and Jacob in some way encountered the fact that this was God. When the man saw that he could not overpower Jacob. So apparently Jacob was a state champion wrestler. So, like, he knows his stuff, you know, learned it from, I guess that wouldn't work, time travel. But anyway, maybe that's how your boys learned. But anyway, he was a champion wrestler, and he couldn't overpower Jacob. And you're like, how does that work either? We're just going to let that sit for now, okay? And so he touched Jacob's hip. So his hip was wrenched, or some say it was pulled out of socket, ouch, as he wrestled with the man. And so at that point, he could overpower him. Then the man said, let me go, for it's daybreak. But Jacob replied, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. And then the man asked him, and here's an interesting thing. So we know it's God, and we're going to see that in a second. The man asked him, what's your name? This is not God going, huh, who are you? Wait, which one? I'm sorry, what's your name again? Which is what I do to half of you on Sunday mornings. I'm sorry, what's your name again? Names are not my thing. I'm sorry, I'm a horrible person. But that wasn't what God was doing. God says, because I want you to name your name. Because what does Jacob mean? What does Jacob's name mean? Deceiver. He says, Jacob, I want you to admit who you are. I want you to call it out loud. And so the man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. For us, we're like, Jacob, yeah, that's cool. In Hebrew, he's going, the heel grasper. I'm Jacob, the deceiver. Then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, which means deceiver. He says, I'm about to change your name, your identity. You will be Israel, which means struggles with God or even God fights. Because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. He says, you're not the same deceiver anymore. You're a different person. Your name is now Israel. So why does Israel, Jacob's 12 sons matter? Because Jacob is Israel. And Israel's 12 tribes are going to be the story of the rest of the Bible. You struggle with God and overcome. He changed his name. And so Jacob had an encounter with God and said, yeah, maybe it's time to be done with the hacks. Maybe it's time to just rest in God. So he goes on and so Jacob says, well, tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask for my name? Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, Peniel, because I saw God face to face and yet was spared. My life was spared. The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. And that's actually true. If you find an Orthodox Jew today, they won't eat that part of meat. So you had God, Jacob finally comes to God in a moment of prayer and desperation, says, God, I can't hack this. I need you to do it. And God says, okay, you're not the deceiver anymore. Your name is struggles with God or God fights. And it's interesting because that name God fights becomes not just Jacob fights with God, but God fights for Jacob. Not just Israel fights with God, but God fights for Israel. And if you're not sure what that means, read Exodus. And the plagues and God fighting for Israel. And read the story of crossing the Red Sea. And read the story of crossing the Jordan and the battles that go on. And wait till this summer when we do our series called King Me. King Me, which is about some of the kings of the time. Because God's fighting for him now too. Which now we get to the crux of the issue. Which is Esau's heart change. Because Esau's heart changes. Sorry, it's a little spoiler. Didn't build it up very well, dramatically. But Esau's heart changes. And you're going to see, it's not because of the kind words and it's not because of the gifts. It's because God did something. And so here's what we see in Genesis chapter 33. It says, but Jacob looked up. So he's traveling. Remember, everybody's ahead of him. Everyone was ahead of him, right? He sent them all ahead, spent the night there, wrestled with God, got his name changed. And we're going to be going back and forth between Jacob and Israel, so don't be like, I thought his name was changed. Just get over it, okay? If you don't like the name thing, we're going to talk about that a little bit later, about someone else's name that got changed. Anyway, he says, Jacob looked up, and there was Esau. Like, he was out of options, coming with his 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel and the two female servants. So again, we talk about who had which kids. He probably said, okay, these are your biological kids. You keep them. These are your biological kids. You probably, okay. So divide them up. He put the female servants and their children in front. All right, the servants don't matter as much. And then he put Leah next, of course, because Leah doesn't matter as much as Rachel. And then Rachel and Joseph, the only child she had at that point, in the rear. Jacob had an encounter with God the night before. Look what he does. Jacob himself went on ahead. Something has changed in Jacob. Because he's not afraid. He's not putting everyone in front of him. He is now going in front saying, hey, I wrestled with God and I lived. And God is doing something. And if anything can change Esau's heart, I know nothing is impossible. I know every chain is breakable. I know that God can do this. And so he went on ahead and bowed down on the ground 7 times as he approached his brother. Nowhere near the arrogant jerk guy that left 20 years earlier. 400 men in Esau. Read the next verse. But Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him and threw his arms around his neck and kissed him. Does this sound like a story, maybe a parable you've heard? Because if it does, we're going to hear that parable in a little bit. And I love this. The Hebrew word here, the phrase he threw around his arms around the neck, it literally means, oh, I'm way off on my notes here. It means something literal. And I'll tell you what it does literally mean in a moment. There we go. It is two words. One is Nepal, and one is Al. And Nepal means to be brought down. And Al means on, or over, or against. And so this phrase literally means he tackled his brother in an embrace and brought him to the ground. Because he was so glad to see Jacob. 20 years ago, this man wanted to kill him. And to Jacob's eyes, 20 minutes ago, this man wanted to kill him. But God had other plans. Because the hacks, there's a huge puddle there. The hacks did not work. Because only God can change hearts. Only God can open up someone to forgive. And so Esau ran, embraced him, tackled him to the ground and kissed him, and they wept. And Esau looks up and says, Well, who are these with you? He sees the woman and children. He asks Jacob, Well, they're children God has given to your servant. And then the female servants and their children approach, and these are my kids here. Yeah, this is her lady. Yeah, sorry, we'll talk about that later. And then this is Leah. She's my other wife. Anyway, they came bent down. Last of all came Joseph and Rachel, and they all bowed down. And Esau's like, this is incredible. Look at your family, Jacob. This is amazing. Look what God has done. And then Esau asked him, what's the meaning of all these flocks and herds I met? To find favor in your eyes, my lord. But Esau said, I already have plenty, my brother. I already have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. I didn't change my heart because of your gifts. I didn't change my heart because you tried to hack it. And he says, no, please, said Jacob, if I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift for me. He says, for to see your face is like seeing the face of God now that you have received me favorably. Jacob realized, this is because of God doing something in your heart. It's like looking at God, seeing that forgiveness. He says, please accept the present. God has been gracious to me. And it's an interesting word here. The word gracious, the root for in Hebrew is berakah, which means blessing. And do you remember what he stole from his brother? His blessing. He said, this is part of the blessing, and I'd like you to have it. So he passes on some of that blessing to him. And so because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted it. And that's kind of where we're going to end this story. The chapter continues with Esau saying, hey, come back with me to my land. And Jacob, whether he deceived his brother again, Esau. Now, whether that was like straight up like he's being a jerk or because God had kind of warned him, don't get caught up because Esau and his family are not following me the way I want you to. So it could have been a separation from them. But either way, Esau goes back to his town and Jacob sets up his own little town with all of his people. And that's how it went down. But so you have Jacob, this whole life hack fail. He tried the hacks. He tried to get the kind words. Maybe that'll change his heart. Maybe gifts will change his heart. But ultimately, it was about what God did. God changed his heart. Because the point is that our grudges, anybody's grudges, are no match for God's forgiveness. God can change. Stop. Okay. Just look at me. God can change any heart. Not some, not most, not the ones that are in the right spot. He can change any heart. So we need to stop trying to hack it. Because you can't hack it. You can't hack it. You want proof? Number one, God changed Esau to forgive. Remember that story from 60 seconds ago? But Esau ran to meet Jacob. Next slide here. Ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him. And Jacob said, for to see your face is like seeing the face of God now that you've received me favorably. God changed Esau's heart. Esau wasn't just like, I'm not going to talk to him. I'm going to look the other way when we're sitting together at Thanksgiving. No, Esau is like, I'm going to kill him. And God changed his heart. How about this one? God changed Joseph to forgive. And actually, Kirk taught the life of Joseph in our Heroes Return series. And you can find that on the slide, the beginning of the slide loop there, a number of years ago. But the quick version of Joseph, we already talked about Joseph, right? Joseph is the youngest, not the youngest, but the oldest son, of biological son of Rachel. And guess what? His brothers were jerks. You know, Jacob's sons, they were all kind of jerks. And what they did is they deceived Jacob, right? Yeah, Israel, Jacob. They deceived Jacob, and basically they didn't like Joseph. Jacob liked Joseph because he was the, you know, the son of Rachel. And so they had him sold into slavery, you know, like you do. And they were going to murder him, but they decided, no, we'll just sell him into slavery. He ended up being bought by Egyptians. Long story short, again, you can listen to the point that Kirk talked about with that. He ends up going to Egypt and ends up rising in position to the second highest role in Egypt. And in this time, God is, of course, over a span of years. And his brothers sold him into slavery to get him there. Okay, get that. Like, this isn't like a common thing. That's a bad thing. And finally, there was a huge famine in the land. And so Jacob's family, his sons, all had to leave from where they were and come to Egypt to get grain, because Egypt had grain, because Joseph was put in charge of the grain. And that's, again, you can read that story. So they finally have this moment where they're together. And Joseph realizes that these are his brothers. And it actually says that at one point, Joseph had to leave the room where he wept uncontrollably. And now the highest position, second highest position in Egypt, and to the Egyptians, as you'll find out in the book of Exodus, the Israelites were not really, the Egyptians didn't care about them. So if Joseph was like, hey, Pharaoh, we're going to execute these guys, Pharaoh would be like, as it is written, it shall be done. Like, but instead, you have this moment where they're all sitting together in this table, and it's a really powerful thing, and I'm going to ruin it, but we have time, we just have to keep going, where he finally gets the brothers all in a room together, just then, sends everybody else out. He's in Egypt, he's in Pharaoh's palace. And Joseph says to his brothers in verse 3 of chapter 45 of Genesis, he says, I am Joseph. He reveals himself, because they didn't know, because he looked all Egyptian-y. And he says, I am Joseph. Is my father still living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. And he says, come close to me. And when they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. Do you remember? Just to remind you, maybe sticking that knife in there, but probably not. Why? Because he wasn't here to stick a knife. He was here to say, and now, I remember that. And now do not be distressed. And do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. He says, for 2 years now, there's been a famine in the land, and for the next 5 years, there will be no plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. God changed Joseph's heart. And Joseph was like, yeah, this wasn't about my brothers. Stupid brothers. That's about God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of this entire household, and ruler of all Egypt. And I'm just going to jump. There's a slide here I'm going to skip. Basically, Jacob dies. Oops, sorry, Jacob's dead. We'll get to him next week, dying next week. But at the end of the story, the brothers were afraid, and they're like, you're going to kill us now that dad's dead. He's like, no, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. A really cool passage. So anyway, that was Joseph. God can change Joseph's heart. And then, God changed Joseph's forgive. And then another name change. My thing just crashed, so I'm following you all the time now. God changed Saul to forgive. God changed Saul to forgive. So who's Saul? Saul was a guy, and you're going to have a chance to read about these a little bit more in depth in your prime groups. But we actually talked about Saul in the last week of the Road series. That's also on the slide. And you can read the whole story of what happened here. But he was actually not just, he was imprisoning anybody that followed Jesus. And he was then not just imprisoning, but killing many of them. And so people in the church were kind of afraid of Saul, because that's a problem. And so God miraculously, incredibly appears to Saul on the road to Damascus and basically changes his heart and says, your name's going to be Paul, by the way. Changes his name to Paul. And he goes to this guy, Ananias, who's a follower of Jesus. Says, Ananias, look, I need you to go to Saul and you're going to pray for him. And then he's going to follow you. And you're going to teach him how to follow me. And Ananias is like, yeah, I know that guy. Nobody. Sorry, God. Not going to do this one, man. He's like, no, you go, because I have changed his heart. Because I have changed his heart. You haven't. No one else has. I'm the one that changed his heart. So in verse 17 of chapter 9 of Acts, he says, so Ananias went and found Saul. He laid his hands on him and said, brother Saul, the Lord Jesus who appeared to you on the road, because God appeared to him, has sent me so that you may regain your sight, because he wasn't able to see. So, and be filled with the Holy Spirit. And then it says that something like scales fell from his eyes. He stayed there with Ananias. He started to learn. He started to grow and kind of be discipled. And so it says he stayed with the believers in Damascus for a few days, and immediately began preaching about Jesus in the synagogue, saying, "He is indeed the Son of God." And all who heard him were amazed. Isn't this the same man who caused such devastation among Jesus' followers in Jerusalem, they asked? Isn't this the same guy? The answer is yes. He says, and didn't he come here to arrest them and take them in chains to the priests? Yes, because you can't hack a heart change, but God can do it. And even Saul, God changed his heart. So God changed Esau to forgive. God changed Joseph to forgive. God changed Saul to forgive. And God forgives you, me. And I think we're grateful for that. And if God can forgive you and me, can he change someone else's heart as well? Here's a story. Man, we're going to go late today because I want to end this with a song. The band is going to come up and end with a song. I'm sorry. And maybe you can let them know up there. It'll be a little bit late. Just a little bit late. There's a story. Jesus said, he was telling this story. There's a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. We don't have time to get into this, but we did talk about it. We watched the video during the parable series. That's also on the slide. The short version is, he's like, "Dad, I wish you were dead." That's basically what he's saying. "Dad, I hope you're dead. Can I have your stuff?" He says, not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. This wasn't deception. This wasn't a poor investment. This wasn't, "I'm going to go and do a great thing and give money away." He wasted it. He wasted all that his father had given him. After he had spent everything, then there was a severe famine in the whole country, to add insult to injury. So now he has nothing, and that famine happened to hit. And he began to be in need. So he went out and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him off to his fields to feed his pigs. Pigs stink. He says, "You're going to be a pig farmer for me to make some money." He was so hungry that he longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. So this wasteful son, who said, "Dad, I wish you were dead. Give me my stuff," takes it, wastes it all, wishes that he could eat pig slop. And then in verse, I don't know what verse it is, but the next verse, it says, when he came to his senses. So now he's got a moment going, okay, something's changed here. He said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.'" And this son, just as a side note, thought his worth was based on how he spent his dad's money. But his worth wasn't about what he did. His worth was about who his dad was and whose son he is. And he says, "Dad, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy to be called your son, but can I be one of your servants?" So he got up and went to his father. Like, if dad can just make me one of his servants, I'm not worthy of being his son. I've lost that. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him. Let me time out right here. This is a parable. And the son represents us. And the Father represents God. So while he was still a long way off, his Father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. And what did he do? He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. Does that sound familiar? He ran to his son. And the son started to bit it out like, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father cuts him off. quick, says to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Bring a ring for his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he was lost and he is found. So they began to celebrate. And let me tell you, this story represents what God has done for us. And I think you've screwed up. And I don't say that because I've been stalking you or because I've got like an Alexa thing listening in your house. I do, but no, that's not why. No, it's because we're sinners. We're losers. We mess up. And we are in the same boat as the son to be able to go to God and say, God, I'm not worthy. And he's right. You're not worthy because of what you do or don't do. You're worthy because I have chosen to call you my child. Because I have chosen to adopt you as my child through the death of Jesus on the cross. And so if God can forgive us, why do we feel like we need to hack forgiveness in our relationships? Why do we feel like we need to work out these details and come up with the nuance and say, okay, I'm going to plan this thing and that'll make this relationship better? Why, when we have God at our fingertips, do we try to work it out ourselves? Because you can't hack it. You can't hack it. Next slide. God changed Esau, his heart. Esau, Jacob couldn't change it. God changed Joseph. God changed Saul, and God forgives. And our grudges are no match for God's forgiveness. So, do you guys want to go? Here's the deal. We have relationship issues. You have relationship issues. There are people. Do you know who's coming up? Do they know who's coming up? Carla's coming up? Okay. Is Carla here? Okay. Why do you keep trying? I don't mean give up, but why do you keep trying to do it on your own? Why do you keep trying to hack it on your own? When ultimately, God's the one that can change your heart. And so the resource that you have isn't fix the problem. The resource you have is go to God and ask Him to change your heart. Because He can. And He will. And so it'd be great, and this is why, again, we're going late, because I feel like it'd be easy for me to say that and say, okay, now go out and don't forget that. But I think you will. And you're going to have a chance in your prime groups to share on this some more, definitely. But I think it's easy to forget that. So I want to give you the opportunity now. You guys can start playing. There you go. And we'll kill the house lights. All the lights, I don't know, the bottom row. And this front row is open. I mean, this is really weird. We're not like that. You know, we don't normally do this kind of thing. But instead of leaving and saying, yeah, I need to do that, I want to give you the opportunity to come forward here, sit on a chair, on the floor, whatever it takes, and just go to God about that person. Go to God about that relationship. Don't try to fix it yourself. Don't try to hack it. Just come here and say, God, I got nothing. And I need you. Because I can't change their heart. I can't bring forgiveness. I can't bring healing to this relationship. But God, I know that you can. I know that nothing is impossible for you, God. And so that's where we're just going to leave it this morning. These guys are going to play and sing that song. And if you want to worship and sing with them, but if you want to just come up front and just pray, God, please change their heart because I can't do it. Ask God to open their heart to forgive. Don't wait till later because later never comes. Later's always later. But right now is an opportunity. No one's going to be talking to you or doing anything. It's just for you while they worship. So that's the challenge.